Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I'm walking through the streets and around the battlements of the fortified city of Girona in Catalonia, Spain. I'm in the company of Molly Wagner, an American who's lived in Australia for many years. Neither of us are certain of finding our way. Molly is the author of No Trespassing, a sumptuous photographic journal of a number of long walks that she made through New South Wales. We're both attending the Walking Art and Relational Geographies Conference, organised by Clara Gari of Now Cochlear, at which Molly will be talking about the formation and growth of Australian walking artists, for which she is a convener. I said yesterday that we weren't going to go straight into the Australian walking artists, so we're not going to go straight into the Australian walking artists, but I am going to say on tape that I'm walking through the streets of Girona with the convener of the Australian walking artist, Molly Wagner.
Co-convener.
And that is really since September last year.
Yeah, September is
2023.
That was our first Zoom meeting. No, in August emails were flying around.
And that was precipitated by three or four Australians meeting in Prespa's, yeah?
Yeah, there were four of us at Prespa. There were two of us in Girona in 2022. I have the wrong accent, but live in Australia. And I think it's Alice Ann is from Brisbane, but she lives in London. But we were considered the Australian women in Girona in 2022. But then when there were four of us at Prespa, I was like, whoa, okay, let's see if we can bring us all together.
Brilliant. Okay, but what was Molly Wagner doing before the Australian Walking Artists? Because I know it's pretty much all-consuming since then. Okay, so you've just already mentioned that you had the wrong accent in Australia.
So yes.
So when did you go there?
We moved to Australia in 1988, and I've been there. Well, I mean, it was supposed to be for 5 years. We did have 3 years in South Africa while my ex-husband did his PhD. And we realized that returning to the U.S. as an unemployed academic and a mom who'd been staying at home for a few years, not so good. When in Australia, we had permanent residency. And they have a social welfare system. So there was a bit of allowance for us in the bank when we got back. So we went back to Australia and have stayed ever since, really.
How long have you been an artist?
That's one of those questions, isn't it? It's like as a kid, I was really interested in doing craft projects. And I've had a camera in my hand since I was quite young. My parents took us to Europe for 6 months, and they decided I was going to be the photographer and bought me this Minolta Instamatic little point and shoot. It's great. So for me, the photography has always been kind of just part and parcel of what I do. But thinking of myself as an artist has never been an easy thing. You know, I never quite feel like a real artist. When I went to university, I studied English and medieval history. I did a master's in divinity at Harvard. I was going to be a Unitarian minister. Way too young for that. That didn't work. So then I did another master's of arts and humanities. But the arts and being in the arts, and I was University of Buffalo, I was doing drama and writing plays and stuff. Yeah, let's go. But coming to art, that was almost I'd always had art classes in my education. Like, mm-hmm. There was always a drawing or a painting class somewhere. When we moved to Australia and had two more children, and I was home with the kids and didn't know which end was up, literally, one of the things I did was start writing and started drawing again. And then it was when we were in South Africa that I really decided, all right, because I couldn't work. I was on some kind of visa that prevented me from working. So I just thought, all right, nap time. I can do some splooging around with watercolors, and was playing with textiles and not knowing that that was a thing in art, but I was making these elaborate sort of drawings with fabrics. And so I was just learning. I was learning the craft.
By learning by doing rather than learning by listening and doing.
You know, I went to the library and I got books, and my parents have been taking me. I mean, they took us to the Albright Knox Art Gallery since forever, you know. It's like, I just kind of grew up in that, in a household where the arts was important.
And that sort of behavior was not only accommodated but encouraged.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you then eventually do an art course in Melbourne?
No, not in Sydney. A response to Empty Nest. Once the kids grew up and left home, went to university and stuff, and I'm just left there all by myself. Oh, my God. What's happened? It's interesting, too, because I was visiting my daughter, Rachel, in Melbourne, and we walked this labyrinth on the Mary Creek track. And in the center of it, we sat down and just had a chat. And she said, Mom, just apply to art school. It'll be great. You'll love it. And I hesitated because of the cost. I just thought, all right. I went traveling for about 2.5 months, but in that process, I applied to the National Art School and Victoria College of the Arts, and I kind of went, all right, Great Spirit, you decide. Because I really didn't know what to do with myself. I interviewed at both schools, and National Art School accepted me, and I also got an apartment after my travels in Newtown, where I still live, which is a very cool place in Sydney. And I went to the National Art School, and that was in 2013.
Can you tell us where Newtown is? I'm sorry, my knowledge of Sydney is pretty limited, so...
It's in what they call the inner west of Sydney, so it's... And it's one of these neighborhoods that has been known for having artists, and, you know, the alternative culture lives in Newtown, although it's, you know, like many cities, gentrifying.
Very different from where we're walking now.
Yeah, the tourist area of Sydney's not... Well, people do come to Newtown, because it is known for that sort of alternative, funky, bohemian.
This says no through road, but I'm fairly confident there might be steps at the end of it. What do you think?
Sure.
It's a risk.
It is, but that's Girona.
Okay, so we'll go that way. So tell us about the art school experience. That was an eye-opener.
National Art School was just amazing. The requirement for the Bachelor of Fine Arts is you have to take art history and theory and drawing throughout the course, every semester. And that just, wow. First year, you experience all the different studios that they offer. By second year, you choose a studio. When I had to choose, I said, all right, I really want to pursue photography. And of course, photography is so transformed with the iPhone and the thousands and thousands of images that are made every minute of every day. You know, we've all got our cameras in our pockets. So once again, I'm with this idea of, well, I love photography, but can I be a photographer? I don't know. I don't know what that means anymore. But I stayed with it. You know, I stayed with the studio and got really interested in making video, and I could literally feel my brain expanding when I was at National Art School. And a lot of that was the emphasis on the art history and theory, and having to write about the work and reflect on what we were making and why. Yeah, it was great. And then third year photography, we had to come up with a self-directed project that would go through the year, which is quite daunting.
Now, I came here the other day. This is the city wall, many bits of which they've renovated.
Right.
And you can walk the parapet.
Shall we?
That's what we're going to try and do. So what did you opt for?
So I stayed with the photography. I learned a lot. There was big upheaval in the art schools in that era in Sydney. We had a change in our head of photography, you know, all sorts of stuff. I ended up going up University of New South Wales, which had their art campus up the street from National Art School, to do my honors. Because during our third year, National Art School didn't offer honors. They stopped offering it opting only for a master's degree, and I was on a student allowance that didn't cover the master's. I may have been a mature age student, but I was a student. Like, I was tutoring, working retail, like whatever bits and pieces of work that I could get to pay for all this fun. So, yeah, so I went up to
you. But you also felt, forgive me, but when you were younger, it sounded like you were a serial student. Did you sort of kind of feel that you had to complete the course get honors? Why?
Well, the thing with the honors, partly I'm just trying to figure out the Australian/British education system, mm-hmm. different to what I grew up in. You know, I learned that if you do an honors and get first class, you can sometimes go straight to the PhD. And in Australia, the PhD in fine art seems to be the thing. And I already have two master's degrees. And there's always that question of how many degrees are enough to be an artist? But I did think, all right, I'll finish the honors year. UNSW was so confusing. It was so topsy-turvy, so different from the National Art School. And they were in a state of flux as well, changing things, because all the art schools were talking about closing and had lost funding. It was a terrible year. There were student demonstrations. I don't know. I don't even really remember what happened, but it just meant all the art schools were in upheaval. But one of the big learnings I had is that the project's more important than the supervisor or the institution. It was just, I thought, all right, just knuckle down and do this project. Get it done.
When was the blue touch paper ignited and you started to make new trespassing?
So at National Art School, they have drawing week that begins the academic year. The first drawing week that I did was walking drawing. I hadn't heard the word walking art. Terry never used that word. But he introduced us to Francis Elise, Richard Long, Janet Cardiff, and he had us walking and making drawings and stuff. And that really was my first, this is a hindsight revelation, but that was when I made my first walking art piece. And it's this kind of sprawling map of a walk I did, full of nostalgia and bits and pieces. It looks a lot like some of my other works. You know, it's like I can see the influence of that on some of the other stuff I make. So
now we've climbed the steps and we're on the new bit of the city wall. The problem is we're going in the wrong direction. We need to be going that way.
Okay.
So sorry, we'll just walk back a little bit the way we came. Okay, so you made your first piece while you were at college.
Yes, and then in my third year with that self-directed project, I was floundering around trying to, looking at artists, looking at this and that. One of my lecturers said, go look at some books by Richard Long. So I did, and I pulled out one. I don't know the name of the project, but it's where he took maps of his local, you know, around his house and drew lines on them and then tried to walk those lines. It was like, oh, this, yes, this makes sense. I don't know why. I don't really know. But I fell in love with those drawings and that action. And I knew about the line, straight line made by walking, but these had another layer and a dimension too. That's when I really started pursuing the walking arts, and I was walking around my neighborhood, and it was because I live in the city, my walks were very urban, and I used Michel de Certeau's essay, Walking in the City, because of course we had to have a grounding text for our writing, which was great. Yeah, so I made all these urban things, and I was reading about urban studies and the Derive and psychogeography. You know, there's much more I need to read, but I kind of know where to go for it. Like I said, I was working all kinds of jobs, so I didn't have time to go out and do the protracted epic bushwalk because I had to get to work and get to school.
I was about to say, no trespassing was an adventure which you undertook with your daughter, you've got more than one daughter.
Yes, she only came on one walk. So I guess in the chronology of things, at the end of January 2017, We have a festival in Australia called Australia Day, but it's become very contentious with post-colonial recognition of how many Aboriginal people have been killed over this course of settling the invasion of the country. January 2017, I was at the Yaban Festival, which is the Aboriginal way of marking and this day of invasion, with a good friend of mine who's part Wiradjuri. And Megan told me her dream of somehow recreating this walk that was led by the Wiradjuri leader Windradyne when he brought 140 Wiradjuri people to Parramatta for the annual governor's feast in 1824. And that appearance at the annual governor's feast, that was the first time the Wiradjuri people ever came to that event, and it marked the end of martial law that had been declared in their country, central New South Wales. So it's this huge, epic, historic event, and so few people know anything about it. It's just like...
I've never heard about it, so, yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, the Brits who were in power at the time, they were sent back to England, and there was some action taken against them because the martial law was horrific. They just... was just open slather on the Wiradjuri people, and mostly women and children, and Windradyne led a fierce, fierce rebellion.
Now, we're sort of looking at a different angle over a valley, and it's just really interesting, this town. It's sort of
so beautiful,
dissected by different things, and then you see property sticking out of the trees and the shrubs and stuff like that. And because it's all at different angles, it's a bit tricky to work out where you are. I think what we might do is
just go up. Megan and I started talking about it, and I started doing some research and learning about Windradyne and learning about the invasion, and you know, having to restructure the way I think about everything, really, in many ways, because how we learn history from the victors.
Yeah.
So here I'm having to learn the history from those who were so defeated and continue to be so marginalized and oppressed. So I'm doing all that. My mother dies, which we knew she was sick. So I went back to the U.S. for 3 months, continued my researches. Meg and I continued talking about this idea of somehow making a walk. Searching for Windradyne's Walk was kind of the first title we were giving it. When I got back to Australia, the first thing we did was I agreed to meet Megan in Parramatta to go for our first walk to explore how to get to Penrith from Parramatta. That walk sort of foreshadowed the whole collaboration because Megan never made it. Her meeting went overtime. I ended up doing a little derive in Parramatta. Anyway, but that started what turned out to be a 3-year-long project, 11 different walks. There was this thing in me that said, well, if you're going to be a real walking artist, you have to do the epic, go out of the city, you know, endure, be alone. It's just that heroic nonsense. I'm a failed bushwalker. Like, I'm not very good at it. Sydney bushwalkers just defeated me. I just couldn't manage it. But I wanted to do this. It was just like, whoa, this, I gotta do this. So I do day walks, and then I set the challenge of a multi-day walk, which meant I had to camp. So I was facing all the fears and all fun. And I also realized that talking about Windradyne in a project with my skin color and my accent was really not a good idea. I mean, if Megan was with me on the project, that would have changed it. But I was literally trespassing into Wiradjuri business, not mine. So, and also in Australia, there's no right-of-way for pedestrians. And often there's vast areas with no footpath. You know, like people drive to the trailheads for their bushwalks. So I was walking highways and secondary roads, sometimes a footpath in a park. But it was in 2019 that I finally walked into Bathurst. Wow, that felt great. It's like, oh, I did it. You know, then wanted to make the artwork and had an exhibition. And the idea of the book sort of sat in the files from the beginning. But putting a book together, I'd never done that.
And that's a huge undertaking in itself.
Yeah, and again, I couldn't find anybody in Australia that was doing this stuff, walking projects and this walking art thing. And, you know, I'd look at books by Hamish Fulton and think, well, where's the Australian equivalent, you know? What are we doing here? I found this website, Walking Art and Relational Geographies, from 2019, and I went, what's this? And I started clicking, and then I found all the publications, and I thought, why can't I be there? There was something in the 2019 about PRESPA, and I went, what's PRESPA? What's the, another Walking Art conference? Who are these people? How can I get there? And I sent an email to Clara, and I said, oh, look, I've been doing this no trespassing thing. Is it suitable for... Oh.
Is that the top of the cathedral? I think it is.
Okay.
Well, I'm asking you.
I don't know. How would I know?
Okay, so we can see the top of a church.
Yeah.
I think we might be...
We're heading
in the right direction. Yeah. We don't want the cathedral itself. We want the next block on.
Yeah.
You're scooting around looking at all these different things. Then I guess we've got COVID coming.
Well, yeah. So I had sent the email to Clara mid-2019 or something. They said, of course, write an application. So I'm trying to write this application. I'm looking up what is relational geographies and how does my work fit into this. And as I'm drafting it, the COVID stuff starts happening. And I think I sent an email, how will the conference happen with COVID? And then it was canceled. It meant I was at home. But I used the time to put the book together and found a wonderful designer, Claire Orell. I thought she was in Sydney. She was in Spain. but she just did. She got a hold of what I had cobbled together, and she just transformed the book into just her ideas of how to... the colors and the way she did it was just like she asked me for what I wanted, like she didn't just do it, but she was able to lift the book into what it is now that is so much better than I could have.
You then came in 2022.
That's right. I've kind of forgot about all this in all the working and stuff, and suddenly I got this email in March of 22 saying, oh, we're having our conference in July. Are you interested in coming? And this was like almost to the day when I had sent my book to the printers to be printed. So I was just like, yes, 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 please. So that's what I did. I just came.
Let's jump ahead now. The Australian Walking Artists, we were talking about it before. You met fellow Australians at Prespas in Greece in July 2023.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
What, you're all in Australia? All of you? That's when I thought, okay, something's happening in Down Under, and more artists are talking about this walking art thing. Now, I don't know, maybe this is partly the influence of, like, the walking body and Hirtz and Yannis and your efforts to promote the notion of walking art. It's getting more press, but slowly, I mean... Really, the Australian artists have responded so enthusiastically to the notion of having a group of Australian walking artists and maybe organizing some things together.
There's a kind of road along there, but do you think we can just sneak along here?
Let's go here. Yeah, and it's just quickly come together. And look, after all those years of sitting around thinking, oh, where are the other mad artists like me? Knowing where they are now has makes such a difference. And it's just what happens at these conferences and how the creative ideas get expanded and pushed and pulled just through conversations and interactions. And I think that will happen in Australia. I guess the question that comes up repeatedly is, what is walking art? What I like about it is there is no real concrete definition. It's sort of interdisciplinary. As soon as you define it, it slips the definition. And that's what I like about it.
So we'll take a shortcut across this concreted footbridge. Yeah, well, if you can recommend one or a couple of walks, great.
The thing about walking in Australia, like, you don't have... Some places there are walking trails and stuff.
But it's got to be on managed routes because it's a wild place.
Yeah.
You don't want to be attacked by something, do you?
Yeah. The Blue Mountains outside Sydney has lots of beautiful walking trails.
And do you recommend a walk around Newtown in Sydney or somewhere?
Oh, just... It's fascinating to wander around Sydney. There's all kinds of interesting places and, you know, walking tours are offered by the city and, companies offer walking tours and cycling tours. So it's definitely a... Sydney could be a more walkable city, but it is a walkable city. There's just a lot of cars because Australia is car-centric.
So your recommendation is a walk in the Blue Mountains and a walk...
Wander around Sydney. Just go for the derive.
And should you happen to be in, they should drop in and have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely. And Newtown is noted for its cafes. We have coffee culture in Australia is serious.
All right. On that note, Molly, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. Can I just say, talking walking is one of those things online that sort of kept me going for a long time, so...
I'll cut that bit.
No, don't, because it's an invaluable resource.
I'm embarrassed. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Molly Wagner. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.